Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 119. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me on the fresh new couch is Ken Phillips. How are you doing, good sir?
Hi, I'm good, Kevin. I gotta say, this couch is pretty rad here. It is a fully electric couch with reclining, you know,
capabilities.
Reclinability. Electric controls, and you know, for the coup de grace, it has USB chargers built into it, Kevin.
Yeah, that part's pretty snazzy. I do like the USB ports. I mean, I have one side of the couch, so I mean, I just mostly use one side of the USB port. But hey, you can keep the keep the toys going all at the same time.
Yeah, that is a smart idea and a nice touch for a couch maker out there. Just any couch makers out there listening, think about putting USB ports in your couch.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Lazy Boy is worth the purchase.
And that is, they sadly are not a paid sponsor, but...
Yeah, that would be awesome if they were a paid sponsor, but you know... What are you going to do? Maybe this will get them to think about it.
There you go. They could be listening.
We'll take a picture, put it on the website, and that'll be the only picture in the article. Yeah. Lazy Boy. Go buy them. but yeah, it is weird
because oddly, we also have bought a Lazy Boy chair over the past weekend. Jackie picked one up in for Kennedy's room for her to sit and read on, so... It's, you know what? We should really be sponsored for this, but.
Simply because of the sheer amount of money that both of us have spent at Lazy Boy, they should at least do us a solid and sponsor the podcast.
Yeah, somehow we're sponsoring them and paying them and then plugging them on our podcast. So I think we're getting this business model backwards somehow.
Yeah, this business model is maybe not the the best, but maybe we need to go the Patreon way, and like every other OPA is going to have to be behind the paywall.
Oh, the dreaded paywall. I don't know. I don't know if we'll get there or not, Kevin, but stay tuned to this space for more information as it becomes relevant, I suppose.
Well, do you think people would want to, put on a skull cap and talk to us telepathically as we do the show? I mean, do you think that would be like a way to get, instead of having a caller, you are virtually connected to someone with their brains? And like, maybe it's not, you know, you have someone that's in Georgia and... Right. I have someone that's in New York or something like that.
So, like a call-in show, you're thinking of a new format for this podcast, sort of like a call-in show using some type of brain scanning device for people to like somehow connect brain to brain with us.
Correct.
While we're recording. So, I guess this is a little off topic maybe, but would it be like they were possessing our bodies and they were talking as well? Is that how, because otherwise how would anybody else hear them for the show?
I wouldn't say that they would possess your body, but you would have to do all of the talking.
So you would just be saying like, okay, they said this, so we could totally like misrepresent what they're saying, and they would not be able to really in this imagined future.
Yeah, I guess they
podcast
would
not, format.
You're already poking holes in this podcast format. Kevin.
Well, I like my possession idea. So
yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out how the possession would work.
Oh, well, it'd be sort of like a multiple personality situation where they would also be occupying, your body by remote brain transference. I would presume on the other end, you would also be kind of taking them over a little bit too, yeah. So it would be some weird mental fusion going on. Yes, a fusion dance of sorts. Kevin just did the fusion dance, and I... Wait,
yeah,
hold on.
You did not return the favor.
There, we got it. We did it right that time. Okay.
Yeah, see, this is why we need a visual element to the podcast.
People need to see this kind of stuff. This is gold.
Unfortunately, the bar, Cesaro and Sheamus, actually do that as part of their entrance. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's really caught on. I think a lot of people know what that is. Maybe you don't even know necessarily what Dragon Ball Z is all about. So the fusion dance, a successful export from Dragon Ball Z. But anyway, we were talking about brains communicating with other brains, Kevin, weren't we?
Yeah, that was really the point of how I tried to segue things with my ridiculous idea.
Yeah, speaking of fusion, yes.
Because the idea of speaking mind to mind with people is a reality with a type of brain cap. BrainNet allows collaborative problem solving using direct brain-to-brain communication. So these people that were in this experiment, they had already done two people telepathically communicating.
Well, we should describe a little bit more some of the detail of the type of communication we're talking about, because it is not really the way that I described it at the beginning here, by saying that your brain is being taken over by a personality.
You are definitely not being possessed in this no. In this incarnation of brain talk.
No, this is sort of a much lower level for sure. But the idea behind it works on this principle that if your eye is looking at a certain frequency of light, like a strobe kind of light flashing at a certain frequency, your brain will produce a electric wave at that frequency, which is kind of a strange concept.
Right, and it doesn't seem to matter what frequency it is, because you have different, because in this experiment they use two different frequencies to cause two different distinct reactions.
Yes, so there was a, like you say, a skull-capped kind of device with sensors on it that went on to the transmitter's head, the person who is transmitting, and the receiver would be able to pick up on it. And how they would transmit, I thought was interesting. They could either look at to the left and see lights that are flashing at one frequency, or look to the right and see lights that are flashing at a different frequency. And then that would be what transmitted kind of a yes-no signal, basically, to the receiver. And
yeah, because there were two senders in this instance and one receiver. And they were all in different rooms.
And they were basically trying to cooperate to play this game that's like Tetris. The two transmitters would tell the receiver when to rotate the piece so it would fit in well. And it doesn't sound like they were moving it around side to side, so it must have been a fairly simple setup, if we want to call it Tetris-like, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely a Tetris-like. It did not sound like they have any T-shaped pieces. Or Z-shaped pieces. It did seem like a somewhat easy task.
But, you know, it's a little more difficult when you're trying to do it without talking and, you know, using some kind of brain scanner to communicate.
The other thing that was interesting is the senders only saw the top half of the screen. So the receiver only saw the bottom half.
Or, I'm trying to think. Was it, I was thinking maybe the receiver only saw the top half and the transmitter would see them both, because then the receiver wouldn't know which way to rotate it. They would have to rely on, Because I think they're the ones who actually are doing the controls, like making it rotate, making the piece rotate. But basically, the general concept.
Yeah, you're right. The senders could see the full screen.
So that let them say what the signal should be, whether it should be rotated or not. I guess that will lead the receiver to rotate it the right number of times. And it's an interesting idea. And to me, the interesting thing is that the frequency of the light somehow controls your brainwave. Like what you see, like directly somehow interacts with your brain, which seems weird.
Yeah, because this obviously it's a form of communication, but it's definitely not a communication as we think of it.
True.
Current, like I would not think of that as being communication.
Well,
but. Obviously, you know, I mean, it's kind of like figuring out Morse code or any type of code, honestly. Like, you're just sending, depending upon the hertz that this LED is being shined at, it's transmitting a different signal. And I mean, I would imagine that with a wide spectrum of hertz, you could, you know, just distinguish, you know, a lot of either letters or just words.
Well,
depending upon patterns.
I don't know, because I'm not sure how much it would be able to go down to that level of like actually using words and things like that to communicate, but it definitely has some kind of impact on your brain. It reminds me, you know, I was just thinking about people who have epilepsy. I think that would enter some, you know, dysfunctional brain state when their brains reach a certain hertz, it seems like. At least that could be my simple understanding of what happens when someone has epilepsy.
Gotcha.
Or it can be triggered from, you know, flashing lights. You always see those warnings. I remember always seeing those warnings on video games when I was growing up.
Yep. It is a thing.
Yeah. So that... could be what's going on there, I guess, if your brain is but who's to say somebody at some point couldn't figure out a series of flashes that would just sort of like disable you know, more typical brain structure people who don't necessarily have epilepsy even. Could we think of a weapon that uses this kind of technology in order to disrupt brain activity using a light flash?
It's going to like hypnotize you into doing what they want you to do. You're going to become a robot assassin.
Well, I don't know, Kevin. You might be taking it a couple of steps further than what I was proposing, but I mean, yeah. Why? I think you bring up good points that definitely deserve questioning. And some hard looks before we go ahead with just kind of willy-nilly doing these kind of experiments. We might all turn into robot assassins before we know it.
That would be a pretty crazy world, Ken. It would be a pretty crazy world.
Say you're looking at your app on your phone and it's flashing a certain pattern. You know what I'm saying? Then you're like turning into a zombie maybe, or...
Oh, you're expecting the phone to just be able to suck us in no matter what, is what you're saying. Electronic devices are all going to pulsate to make us use them even more.
Perhaps. I guess that could be another downside to people experimenting with this kind of thing. Although I would really like to get one of these brain scanners. I think that would be cool.
It does sound pretty interesting.
They, I believe, have kits that you can get for like $200 that are not like hospital grade or anything, but you know, you can see like something like this, like the the hertz of the signal inside the brain.
Oh, right.
So I don't know. All right, so I might be halfway convincing myself to do this experiment now, Kevin. You can see the trouble.
It would be pretty interesting, I guess, to do something like this. I believe I've talked about my infamous idiocy of sitting in a homemade electric chair in high school.
That's right.
If I haven't, there it is.
No, it's been a frequent topic, but I think it always bears repeating because it is quite unusual, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of a similar thing. Like, you're talking about the different hertz and everything of... it's just a different type of frequency, let's say.
That's right. It's not a rental car in this case.
Right.
It's not just a rental car, Kevin. It's also a measure of frequency. But I guess eventually, Kevin, this could lead the way also to some type of brain mesh personality transference. But I don't think we're quite there yet.
Yeah, and that would be that'll be pretty crazy, though. That I guess it's something, you know, another one of those technologies that seems like it's within grasp of our lifetime, of being able to communicate in some way just through like brain waves.
Right.
You're gonna be like, I mean, again, it's not quite telepathic, but I guess something like that could come about from this.
Yeah, I think that is something that I always thought would be really cool. But then what, I don't know, it's hard to imagine like what kind of form that would even take or what the experience would be like if you did have that happen where you're able to like experience someone else's mind basically directly somehow.
Right.
You know. It could be a really eye-opening experience. I don't know.
it would be kind of interesting if it helped everyone sympathize more,
or be able to come to understanding better.
Yeah, and I mean, I believe that we've had a number of times we talked about. Kind of a mass aggregation of information or opinions kind of helps things out.
Well, yes. If I would say everyone's opinion can be heard somehow and still have something get done, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Just throwing out a wild idea there, Kevin. I don't know. It probably is a lot harder said than done, I think, though.
Oh, yeah. I guess I was trying to figure out in my brain how to switch to the next one.
Well, let me adjust the hertz in this room, and that might help your brain come up with the right kind of segue here.
Well, yeah, I don't know if there is a good one in there. I guess you could talk about this mother's brainwaves when she decided to, without requesting, post a picture of her son and involve him in the Hymn 2 movement, which was essentially he... saying that women shouldn't bitch about sexual abuse.
Yeah, or that, you know, hey, men are the real victims here, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of the one of the messages, I think, that the hashtag #HymnToo has come to mean. Although I was reading that the #HymnToo movement, or hashtag, I guess, started out with people or men trying to be in solidarity to the Me Too movement, but then it kind of became...
Oh, morphed into
yeah,
the opposition.
In a strange way that, I guess, hashtags can do, Kevin.
Yeah, they can take on a life of their
own. And they can mean different things to different people at the same time, honestly. Like, some people might be using it mockingly, while other people are being genuine, you know?
Yeah, the article in question that you posted from TheVerge.com, definitely, I saw some memes, because, okay, I guess if somehow you're... Oh,
should we explain what this the whole tweet is
here to start with? That's what I was just going to head for here.
Okay, good.
If somehow you haven't seen this and you've been online and you're downloading a podcast, which is kind of strange if you haven't seen this at some point, but...
Yeah, if you've received this via carrier pigeon and you don't have internet access...
You probably haven't seen this meme.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you have. And that'd be pretty badass if we could distribute our show through Carrier Pigeon.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to look into maybe a breeding program or something. We have a chicken to home already. Oh, so
That's what we could do for the Patreon account. Special for Columbus subscribers.
You just get a flash drive delivered with our episode on there.
Yeah, with pigeon carrier.
If you could just attach the last week's episode back onto the pigeon, and it'll take it back to headquarters, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be pretty badass, and just have like a flock of... What would we need? Crows? Ravens?
Whoa, ravens? Instead of pigeons, you think?
Oh, pigeons.
I mean, it started with pigeons, but...
I don't know why I derailed myself that easily.
I mean, if we did ravens, they could probably carry a lot more thumb drives to kind of... You know, we might have to... We could upgrade to ravens eventually, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Start with a lowly pigeon, move up to the ravens.
Yes.
Okay, I can dig that.
Yeah. I think the pigeons are going to be easier to work with. Ravens can be tricky, I think.
Well, Ken, mothers can be a little tricky, too.
Oh, right, yeah. Let's get back on topic here.
She posted a picture of her son. And said that, and what did the tweet read exactly?
Yes.
Graduated number one in boot camp, awarded the USO award, number one in a school. He is a gentleman who respects women. He won't go on solo dates due to the current climate of false sexual accusations by radical feminists with an axe to grind. I vote him too.
Right.
So yes, if you were under said rock and did not read that,
and the picture itself is a pretty cheesy one, and I think he's being intentionally cheesy here.
Yes, I do think that it was intentionally cheesy. The original picture and the post picture that he ended up posting. Like, I like how it actually took more than a day to get to him.
Oh, that he hadn't realized that this happened? Because, yes, she didn't, his mom didn't tag him or anything
yeah. in the post,
or tell him about it, apparently.
Yeah, so this cracked me up that either A, like, he doesn't follow his mom.
That could be.
I'm just throwing that out there. Or he really is a younger gentleman who does not use the social media all that much.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe he just doesn't use what his mom does because he is younger.
It's possible to miss, you know, post occasionally, Kevin, even if you are. I mean, I don't get on Twitter all the time, I guess. And so there are many, many posts that I miss scrolling through my timeline, I'm sure.
Oh, well, yeah, and it doesn't help that, A, sometimes you see repeats if you are on a lot, and B, it's not chronological. Still, that's a bit of a problem.
So you can miss some tweets every so often, Kevin. That might be what happened here. I don't know.
Yeah, but this one really kind of blew up more so than other ones.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. Well, we don't have stats here on this tweet because she deleted it.
But yeah, and they had to use a picture of someone's screen grab of it. And that's where part of the memes, like, I did not see people posting pictures of famous people and claiming that they were their sons.
Part of what makes this meme work is the way she said, "This is my son," and capitalized my MY. I don't know. That really gives a certain format to all these various
posts. All the subsequent memes.
Yes. It's like a little shot of humor there right at the beginning, I think. You know, the various versions of this meme involve Marty McFly.
Norman Bates. I think maybe a wombat.
Yeah, that looks like kind of a wombat creature.
Some type of marsupial.
I like the one that was Polytrades from Dune. I don't know if anybody's listened or read Dune out there.
Oh, okay. That's why I am not familiar.
This is my son. He was the product of millennia of selective breeding. He is the Kwisatz Haderach and the Messiah long prophesied by the Fremen. He won't go on solo dates due to the current climate of false accusations by radical feminists with an axe to grind. I vote. Hashtag him too.
Yes. In these examples, they are certainly not in solidarity with the people who may have overtaken the hashtag. I would have to say there's still some resistance pockets.
Yeah, I would say you're right here. This has taken on like a new, as things often do, a new ironic twist with people using the hashtag now ironically against the sort of male-centric hashtag. Is that a fair way of describing it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of describing it.
I don't know. But, yeah, so there's some funny memes out there. but you had said something too, Kevin, I didn't want to forget about.
Oh, what was that? Well, because I already forgot about
before we started recording, you had asked me, or you had said that you did not know.
Oh, yeah, they said at the top of the article, a rare reverse milkshake duck appears, which I've got to admit, I feel like I'm usually up to date on my internet lingo, but this is one that is not ringing a bell.
Well, all right, I can elucidate what a milkshake duck is, Kevin.
Well, that's good.
So this dates back to the
January of 2017.
Well, actually, it would have been June of 2017.
Wow.
Oh, no, before that. Actually, it would have been, that's right. This was the 2016 presidential debate. The town hall style debate, I don't know if you watched any of those or that particular one.
No.
There was a gentleman by the name of Ken Bone who asked a question.
Okay, yeah, I remember that dude, because he got radio famous for a while.
Hmm. So he, I'm trying to find the tweet that kind of gave it this name. Oh.
Okay.
All right, so yes, there is a, during that time, there was a, idea that, the other thing about Ken Bone was that it turned out he was like into weird porn, right? So that came out kind of shortly after he became famous, and like people loved him for his question asking for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah.
Because he seemed to be asking like a genuine question in kind of like a reasonable way. And he was sort of like lovably a doofus looking almost in some way. I don't know. Maybe, who knows? This is my interpretation.
There was a lot of charm involved with him that I think made the internet love him.
So this is the first origin of Milkshake Duck as a concept. There's a Twitter account called @pixelatedboat, and somebody I follow because they say funny stuff. they tweeted, "The whole internet loves Milkshake Duck, a lovely duck that drinks milkshakes." 5 seconds later, "We regret to inform you, the duck is racist." So the idea is that there's these figures that come up, become popular, and then it turns out like, oh, they're a terrible person, or, you know, there's bad stuff in the background about these people.
Right.
So this, Kevin, I think you can see now where the idea of the reverse milkshake duck comes in, because this gentleman here actually turned out not to be a Him2 person. He had no idea that his mom had posted this, and said that he was not in favor of those kind of views. Or his neither was his brother, who also found it to be quite amusing.
Yeah, and in some ways I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't dating someone already. Because I would have to say off the top of my head he's a somewhat good-looking gentleman. Or dating anyone that, yeah. I guess I'm surprised that he was not in a relationship. Maybe I should put it that way.
Well, I don't know, Kevin.
No matter what kind of relationship he enjoys, he seems to be in good shape. He seems to be a good-looking gentleman. And he is, and I don't know what he does, but maybe he's just a bum and he doesn't have a job.
Well, he was in the Navy.
That's what makes him undesirable.
He was in the Navy at some point. Well, he's a Navy veteran, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, the Navy parts seem to be past tense.
Well, it's hard to say, Kevin. We don't know what's going on there. And I don't really think I'm in a position to speculate. But
that's what this show is about, Ken. It's about speculation.
I would speculate more if it was like, I don't know, somebody who hadn't already gone through a period of plenty of the whole internet basically speculating about his beliefs and based on what his mom put out there. I feel like he deserves a break at this point.
But yeah, him and his now is 16,000 additional Instagram followers.
Yeah, he may have some people interested in dating him after this. I don't know. It's possible that this kind of attention and fame could lead to dating opportunities, shall we say?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, any type of fame, it tends to help you out in the dating department when you're famous.
Yeah, I would say so. It seemed to work for Johnny Depp for a long time. We had covered him before.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's probably a whole different well, you know what I'll say? This gentleman, his dating opportunities are probably a dwarf planet compared to Johnny Depp's Johnny Depp in his prime.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to give it up for that segue. Because, of course, we're going to be talking about a newly discovered extreme dwarf planet, also called a goblin.
The goblin.
Oh, sorry. The goblin. So this is a planet that would be, well, I don't know. Are we calling it's a dwarf planet?
Okay. Yeah, it's a dwarf planet. Because it's 2015, because that's when it was discovered, TG38 is its formal name. And it's an extreme trans-Neptunian object.
How do you like that? Yeah, that's a good one. So it's out past Neptune, meaning
yes, it is way out there,
and it's even past Pluto.
Oh, right.
So it is, as you say, the farthest out there object that we've identified of this kind.
Yeah, 7.45 billion miles.
And the weird thing is that if you look at its orbit, it actually has a really strange, like, you know, you normally would think it would, the sun would be right in the middle of an orbit. But this one, like, the sun is, like, right at the edge of the circle. So, like, it goes very way far away from the sun as well. So,
yes,
it has a strange orbit.
Yeah, they think that there's something out in past that area that is helping keep it in orbit in that, like, instead of being rotating around the sun, it rotates around something else.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So they this is the mythical planet X, or well, I guess the ninth planet at this point.
That is kind of just like Pluto, or no, is it Pluto?
Well,
it got downgraded.
Pluto was demoted, but I'm talking sorry, you were talking about there being another bigger planet out there.
Oh,
that would be the planet
that's unfound currently.
But presumably might be out there, a bigger than Earth planet. But, you know, so far out there, really, that the sun would be just a little kind of ball out there among the other stars. I'm not sure that there'd be much going on there for people, really.
Yeah, and it's pretty crazy that it takes 40,000 years for this thing to fully go around the sun.
Yeah, and that's a long time. we can't wait that long.
Yeah, that'd be pretty crazy that you would not go around the sun. You know, I mean, we obviously go around the sun multiple times before our expiration. You would not even be remotely close. Like, you'd be born in a season, it would probably be the same season by the time you died.
Oh, if you lived on this hypothetical planet out there.
Yeah, if you lived on this hypothetical dwarf planet out there. Well, it's not a hypothetical dwarf. If you hypothetically lived on the planet, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Is the better way to put it.
Yeah, it would also be really low gravity, too. So that would be weird.
Yeah, we'd have to be really fat. Or wear something really, really, really heavy.
Yeah, something like a Little Prince situation. I don't know if you ever read that book. But he lived on a little planet with volcanoes. This planet probably doesn't have volcanoes, though, sadly. Or a rose, as he did on his planet. But it would be, and they do say that there's really no point in visiting this little dwarf planet, because it just seems like a kind of speck of rock out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's just interesting because of its oblong orbit.
And that it does point to the possible existence of this other huge planet out there, way far away from all the other planets. So what's that planet doing out there, you know?
Yeah,
that makes you a little suspicious. This is the kind of thing where, like, that's where, like, the aliens' bases are, that are, like, all monitoring us or something, so that we can't detect them.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? When you start pulling out things like the inner Oort cloud and the Kuiper belt, the Kuiper belt, I guess, is all the debris that kind of is out there at the edge of space.
Or the solar system, yeah.
Solar system, yeah. And the goblins passed that.
Yeah, it's super far out there. I think it's like 60 times farther from the sun than the Earth is from the sun.
Yeah.
So, we're not really that close to the sun.
No. No, I do not think that we would make a trip to the sun if under current conditions.
Yeah, I think it would take, you know, if I was doing the math right, it would take roughly, 65 years or so to reach it with a probe even. And then once you get there, you're like, yep, it's a rock. not really the most exciting prospects.
No. There's not going to be too much farming territory out there.
Not really. No, not great place to set up a colony or anything. Just a big rock out there.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty cool that something. Well, I mean, just all this stuff in deep space that they continue to find that's out there is fascinating, I think, which is why we do tend to come back to these stories. Because I know that there's another space story that I have lined up and ready to go.
Yeah, we've got some more topics ready to go. This is it's a good feeling, Kevin, to know that there's topics out there waiting for us.
Yeah, well, and it's not heist related material, but you know, someone did try to heist the Columbus crew out of the city of Columbus.
Oh. Did they now? Oh, that's right. We talked about it on the show, Kevin.
Yeah.
The owner of the team, actually.
I will admit to maybe not being as involved as some people in the Save the Crew movement, but we have definitely talked about it a couple of times prior to this one. And it is with... a bunch of optimism still, because nothing is completely concrete, but there seems to be a team of investors, one of them being the Browns owner Jimmy Haslam and his group, and another local investor, I'm trying to think of Mr. Edwards. Pete Edwards Jr. Is the Columbus guy involved in purchasing the crew from Anthony Precourt, who intended to be the heister and take the Columbus crew to Austin.
So he will still be able to get a team in Austin. I wonder if he'll end up having to pay the franchise fee. Wasn't that part of the issue?
Well, a lot of people were thinking that he basically was trying to get around paying the expansion fee.
Mm. Yes.
Which is normally required. And by having an escape clause to kind of do a quick recap, by writing in an escape clause to move specifically to Austin when he bought the crew, to me, when you have that type of clause, you are intending to make the move. Like, you don't insert that just because.
Yeah, by the way, if I should say... I don't know. Want to move the team to Austin. That will be cool. And we'll be able to do that.
Hey, yeah.
No, I just put this in the contract. You know, I don't know.
Just for kicks. Yeah. I mean, just the wild off chance that things don't work out.
It's not that I want to move to Austin. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
It's definitely not because I want to move to Austin.
Right.
It's just a safety valve. In case things go terribly awry.
Right. Just I picked a random city. It's not because I want to go there. Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah.
It's kind of a win-win, I suppose, Kevin. Although I don't know. I guess it is a win-win. What would you say? If this deal ends up holding together.
Yeah. The thing that's crazy is that Austin and Columbus are basically the same city except in different states. It's a lot, you know, it started out as a college town, but now is, and the state capital. But they weren't necessarily the biggest cities in their state. Now, I think Columbus is much closer to being the largest city in the state than Austin is, just because Dallas and Houston are grossly huge.
Huge, yeah.
But they are growing. Like one pop, I think Austin's 13th in the US population wise, and Columbus is 14th. So, I mean, it's a growing population. A lot of businesses want to be there. A lot of startups want to be in both cities. There's a lot of people in both cities that watch international soccer, which, kind of brings us back to the topic at hand too. So the demographics are very similar between both of the cities, which is why it always seemed weird to me that they were pushing this narrative about how, like they just made Austin sound like it was a much, much better city than Columbus. And I'm gonna guess that it's a fun city to go to, and I'd like to go down there sometime. I know the wife enjoyed her time down there with one of her good friends when she went down.
Yeah, that's interesting. That would be a good good place to check out, I think. Go down to Texas sometime. I don't know why I've never thought about going down there before.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even necessarily need to go down for like South by Southwest. I mean, 'cause that's it. The wife just went down when she went down. Like nothing crazy was going on. She just kind of hung out, and she had a good time.
I've heard San Antonio is pretty down there too.
Oh,
But,
yeah.
there's different places to check out. I wouldn't mind checking out down there in Texas. You go see the Alamo.
Well, and then that was really mentioning San Antonio. That was another part of the story. If we're kind of doing a little bit of a recap. And talking about not wanting to pay the expansion fee because San Antonio was trying to get a team. And Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin are all, they're not near each other necessarily, but they are kind of within a 3 hour or so drive of each other, depending upon which city you're in. In San Antonio, because Houston has an MLS team, Dallas has an MLS team. And that was the other thing, is that they were talking about the Hispanic, fans that they'd have down there, but neither Dallas nor Houston has a great crowd. Like, they're not tops in the league at attendance, despite the fact that they're in.
A huge metropolitan market.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things that it doesn't always translate just because the city's bigger. And Chicago's not that good either. But also, I think two of those, I think Dallas's field is not actually in Dallas. I think it's in Frisco, if I'm not mistaken, and Chicago is in Bridgeview, I think. So
Okay.
like they're both outside the city proper.
So they would probably want to have downtown stadiums if they could there as well, I'm guessing. But,
Yeah, and I mean that seemed to be the only sticking point, honestly, for Precourt. But it seems weird to me that these new possible owners have already talked to two or three people about sites already in the downtown area. And that's how quickly it's getting done, rather than what Anthony Precourt even tried to do. Like it does not seem like he tried to push hard enough here. Again, going back to the like his sole purpose for buying it was to kind of skip paying expansion fees and just move a team from one place to the other and just claim that it was because, not enough people were coming to the games.
Yeah, I think would have been pretty shady if it ended up going through that way. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. I mean, I guess it's fair for him to, if he ends up not having to pay this expansion fee, I guess I wouldn't be too upset about it. In one sense, I almost would, because it's like you're rewarding bad behavior in a way. But on the other hand, it's like he did go through 4 years of owning the team or whatever, however long it was. And like he went through something, I guess, in order to be able to claim sort of avoidance of this fee. So I don't know. It's not that big a deal, I guess.
As I always say, too, MLS didn't just look at that contract and miss that section by accident.
Unless they did. I don't know.
I guess, but I really doubt that. In my opinion, there was definitely involvement on the MLS's part to want to move the team out of Columbus. But the Save the Crew people, I pledged for everything. I tried to retweet stuff and like stuff that applied to the movement. And they even did the pledge of who would get season tickets. And that was the other thing that I did too. Like, I understood people not wanting to buy tickets for this season because they didn't want to give money to an owner who was actively trying to move the team.
Right.
But I also felt like still sticking around and being a fan was the right move. And that's what I did. And I mean, I already, even before this news came up, I had renewed my season tickets for next year. And I have, tickets for the playoffs.
Okay.
So, I mean, I have everything locked in. As far as that goes. So, I mean, to me, if you financially commit to it, you're definitely doing your part.
No, I would say that I don't think anybody should, look down on you for not supporting the crew. And so that's pretty cool news, I gotta say. I have not been to a crew game for a while, but it has been fun. There's been fun times that I've had there. Of course, I remember seeing USA Mexico. That was quite exciting.
Yeah, well, and that was the other reason why it was really weird that they wanted to move soccer out of Columbus, considering the good luck of the American team against Mexico here in Columbus, and specifically in Cruz Stadium. And honestly, I do think that stadium could at least use a little refurbishing to help it look a little bit nicer. Because that was one thing that I always felt like Precourt claimed that they helped kind of upgrade the stadium, but I never felt like they really did anything other than replace the really terrible, terribly old scoreboard that caught on fire. So he was kind of forced to get rid of it too, since... it literally caught fire.
If your scoreboard catches on fire, you probably have to replace it. If you're going to stay open. So, yeah. I don't know if you can necessarily claim that as spending on your team in infrastructure.
It's definitely spending on infrastructure, because the new screen was much better. But still, like, when... you're required to do it because the other thing caught on fire. it's one of those ones where it's like, can I buy the oldest computer that you have? We don't have anything later than this year. And I would imagine it's that way with scoreboards too. Like, no, we don't have anything that's that old anymore. Like,
give me the shittiest thing you have. Yeah.
Oh man, that's still kind of expensive. Damn, yeah. Man.
This quality's a little too good. I mean,
do you you have something a little lower quality.
You sure you don't have anything shittier?
I really don't want to put much into this team. I really want to move to Austin.
God damn it. All right. Do that one. So, yeah, I imagine that's basically what went down for the new scoreboard purchasing.
Oh, man. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, everyone out there, for our for the applause. You can hold it to the end of the show. Our
dramatic recreation of that meeting.
Well, Ken, unfortunately, one thing that seems to not be saved these days is our bell time beer of the evening. And maybe this is news to you, but unfortunately, Four String Brewing closed until further notice, and it would seem to be appearing that they will not be around at all any longer, which is why I went to the grocery store and grabbed some of their Brass Knuckle, their American Pale Ale. I would have to say probably not one of my favorite beers from them. I did have a number of beers that I did like. Their Ghost Ship Vortex, which was their Baltic Porter, was outstanding. Motor Breath, which was an Imperial Stout, extremely good. And I'm trying to think of what the other one was off the top of my head. That their Big Star White IPA was certainly one of the gateways to me when I started getting hoppy. That was one of those beers I'm like, oh, I kind of like this IPA better than other IPAs. I think maybe because it's not hopped as heavy, and you still get that like white Belgian-y kind of flavor to it, so it kind of offsets some of the hops too, just because of the strong yeast flavors.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's probably I think I've had that as well, and it does remind me of being well balanced. Well, that's bummer. That's bad news that they're going out of business. This actually is probably my favorite, or one of my favorites of theirs. I do happen to like the Brass Knuckles, so that worked out. But bummer that they're not going to be around anymore.
Yeah, so we might be doing a farewell tour. I am also probably going to be doing, since we've moved past Oktoberfest, we might need to bust out some pumpkin beers for the Halloween / Thanksgiving season.
Well,
I already had one for Stunt Granny Audio, which was the Punked from Common House Ales, which is just a distributor here in town. They do not have a physical location.
I see. And would you say it was did it rise above being a gimmicky flavor beer?
It was very tasty.
Oh, that's good.
There are some, there are definitely some that are better than others. And it was not, I don't like too much of the pumpkin spice. Like, you've got to do it in moderation. Like, there are some of the more famous ones that I do not like because I feel like they're overspiced.
Yeah. Like a Blue Moon, don't they have a pumpkin?
Ooh, I haven't had the Blue Moon pumpkin.
Oh.
Honestly. But I do believe that they have a pumpkin.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they do. Or they did at one point at least.
I'm trying. Oh. I think that it's is it Thirsty Dog? And I'm thinking of two Christmas ales too that I think are overly spiced. But I think Thirsty Dog, I think they overly spice their Christmas and their pumpkin.
Yeah. Ale. Christmas ales are supposed to be spicier, I guess, but you can probably still go a little on the overspiced side, too.
Well, yeah, and we use a malt, a lighter malt grain rather than like a really dark beer, like more of a reddish beer or so, instead of something with a roasted malt in it. It doesn't always hold up as good to me. The spices, because if you go porter, oh yeah, because the one from Common House Ales there is a porter. I always think that the spices work better in that because the roasted malt kind of mutes them out a little bit more. So I do like probably the darker beers. Like when they start getting into more of a ruby beer, I think that's when they tend to get a little overwhelming.
That's a good point. I think that would probably make a difference there. Well, I might be. Maybe we could set up a tasting of that possibly for next time.
Oh yeah, and I'm trying to think of what. Oh yeah, Dave Doesn't Know from Wolf's Ridge is very good because their Imperial Pumpkin Ale is okay, but the Dave Doesn't Know I believe is their kind of highlight because they have two pumpkins from Wolf's Ridge, and the Dave is better than the other one. So
All right.
yeah, maybe we'll have
To
to
keep a
set that
lookout for
up
that one
here.
too.
On these here shows. So at Frang11, at Gozer33, the brand's at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See you next week.